Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Spark London.
We tell true stories.
We tell them live.
And we tell them all across London.
To attend one of our live shows, go to sparklondon.com.
Thank you. Lovely to see everybody. Good. Welcome to Spark London. I'm Charlie Harrison, your host. For those that don't know, Spark is a true storytelling night that happens all across London. So we have live open mics that happen in Hackney and in Brixton. And then we have a curated night here in Warwick Avenue. And I am so super excited about the acts tonight. I'm not supposed to have favourites, but between you and me, this one's one of my favourites so far. I sometimes go for walks around here just before I do this show, because it's really nice around the canal around here. I go for a walk along the canal. And I was doing this last week, and there was this man with dreads, and he started talking to me. He said, "Do you want a cup of tea?" He lived on one of the boats. People live on the boats just down there. And they sell things as well. I said, "I'll have a cup of tea." And I met his wife, and we sat down. It was really, really lovely, this really sort of surreal experience. But we started talking about animals. Good subject to talk about, I always think, animals. We started talking about animals. And anyway, the wife of this guy just down there said, as a Muslim, we like to do really charitable things, right? So we like to sort of give to charity. That's part of the faith. And it's really hard these days to give to charities because a lot of them are big and they have lots of admin, etc. So what I do is I buy things from the pet shop and then I release them into the wild. Like, no joke. And then she told me about all these sort of like buying koi carp and stuff and then putting them and just releasing them in around the boat and birds and stuff. And I still can't work out whether that's like a really like pure, beautiful thing to do or just like, imagine if loads of people are doing it and it's like increasing demand for captive pets to then be released and probably perish in England. Like, crazy. But go meet them. I mean, they only live down there. Very interesting. So I'm going to introduce our first act. We've got some fantastic storytellers. Some of them have spoken at open mics before. Some of them haven't. But you're very much in for a good show. Are you excited?
Yes.
Yes. Please put your hands together. Stamp your feet if you want. Bring onto the stage Tony, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening, culture fans. Good evening, the audience there. Good evening to the people that didn't want to push the boat out and pay £7 for a ticket, who are listening by podcast, you tight people. Anyway, it was 1996, and I was living in this lovely little hamlet in South London called Catford. I don't know if anybody knows it. You're familiar with it. My girlfriend at the time, for some bizarre reason, decided she didn't want to go out with me anymore and that she was going to move 300 miles away and live in Newcastle. Now, that's where I'm from, Newcastle. I don't know if you got the accent. It's something that just gives it away, doesn't it? So I was confused, obviously. Shocked and hurt as well. And then after I got over it, I thought, what can I do with my life? I was 27. I just thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll join the circus because that seems like a really good idea. And I thought, I'm getting on a bit because 27's a bit old to be joining the circus, to be honest. So I thought, I better hurry the fuck up and join the circus. So I joined Zippo's Academy of Circus Arts, a fine establishment. I trained to be a trapeze artist, a knife thrower and a fire eater. I did a bit of juggling, but I was shit. And I did like some shite mime. And then after touring round for 6 months, I got a bit bored with it. And one of the clowns called Tommy, he was a bit of a twat and he didn't like me. He was always trying to start arguments. One day, I can't remember what happened, but I tried to run him over. And he went running to... It wasn't in a clown car, neither. It was in a Ford Escort van. He went running to tell the boss, and he said, oh, Zip, Zip, or the clown. He said, oh, Tony's just trying to kill me again. And Zippo, he said, oh, well, you'll have to leave. And actually, it was quite good because I got sacked. And I said, oh, really? You're giving us the sack? I can go now. And it was the best thing that ever happened. So I thought, oh, then I was bored. And then the strange thing about boredom makes you do really strange, crazy shit. So I went and joined another circus. And in hindsight, was probably the wrong thing to do. And one of the things about being in the circus is if you fall out with people, like your caravan's here and like their caravan's there, so you're like really close to them, so if you manage to piss people off, like I had this talent for doing it when I was younger, then it's like a really bad idea to be like living next door to somebody like that. In this circus, the boss was called Cosmo, he was a clown, Cosmo the clown, Joe Fool was the other clown. Now, first of all, I fell out with Joe. It wasn't Joe. But luckily, he was a bit... He didn't like speaking to people, so I fell out with him, but I didn't know because he didn't speak to people. So it was quite good. It was a while before I found out. But Cosmo was quite vocal. And one day he came to me after the show and he went, your act, shit. What do you mean, like? He went, that shit mime act you do, it's shit. He went, you can't do mime. I'm like, what do you mean I can't do mime? I've got a certificate. Which... That's not true, I just made that up, but he was like, oh, you got a certificate, and then I sort of bullshitted a bit. But anyway, he was adamant that my act was shit. And I was doing some other acts in the circus, and one of which was I used to lie on a bed of swords. And then somebody would come out with a bed of nails, and it gets better. And then they'd put the nails on my chest, and somebody would stand on it, and to people that don't know, it looks quite impressive. It didn't really impress me, to be honest. But one night... Cosmo was the assistant, and he'd become a bit bored with me for the shite mime act. He called this young boy out the audience. He said, "Oh, come and stand on Tony." I can't remember what my stage name was then. And this little kid stood on my chest. Normally, that's where the act would end. You go like, stand, round of applause, and all that sort of shite. And then Cosmo had the microphone one night, and he started talking to this kid. He was saying, "So, where you from?" And I'm lying on the floor saying, "Hey, you remember me, you know?" And then the kid was saying, "Oh, I've come from Norwich." "Oh, Norwich, is anybody else here from Norwich?" And he went into this big rigmarole, and turns out that it was the boy's birthday. And he went, "Oh, hold on a minute, stay there." And he went into his caravan, and he came back about 5 minutes later with a balloon model. And went, "Oh, here's your birthday, here's a fucking giraffe." He didn't say that, this giraffe. And then eventually the boy got off, and I was like covered with like pinwheels, and I'm like, afterwards I said, "Look, Cosmo, you're taking the piss." And he said, oh, you didn't want to spoil the boy's birthday, did you? And so he was trying to blame me, And then I thought, all right, we'll leave it. Next night, we were in Earlham Park in Norwich. Same routine. I just thought, oh, come on, get a little kid from the front row. He went, "Oh, you sir, up at the back." And I was like looking because I couldn't see for the lights, and then. Interview came. It was like the world's fattest man, and I was like squinting. I was like, "Is this a joke or something?" And this guy, I don't want to be rude or anything because I'm putting a bit of weight on myself. He was like a fucking bin liner full of tits, and he just rolled down the aisle, pushing small children and people out of the way, and I'm like. And I was shaking my head at Cosmo. I'm like, "You're taking a fucking piss. You can't get him to stand on me." So anyway, the bloke came up and he put one foot on my chest, and it was, you know, that sound an accordion makes when you mean, that's what my chest did. It was like I was wheezing. I was like trying to smile, going, "Look at me." He put one foot, and then he put the next one on. I thought, I'm going to die on stage, and nobody's going to notice. I'm going to be like a fucking nail sandwich, and then. The big fat guy, like a bin liner full of tits, got on, and Cosmo did the same routine. Oh, you're from Norwich? Oh, you're here with your mates? Oh, you're on a stag party? You know, like, fucking get off. And then eventually, he got off, and then I chased him out, and I couldn't find him. He went and hid in his caravan. I was banging on his caravan. I was like, "Come out, you." And so I had a big argument. I went, "That's it, I'm leaving." So I left. And then on the way home, Joe Fool phoned us up and begged us to come back to the circus, and for some strange reason, boredom makes you do stupid things. I fucking went back. And he went, oh, we'll give you another trial. I'm like, really? Anyway, it all went terribly wrong. The next night, it was the last night in Earlham Park, 200 people in the audience, and the worst thing is, some people from another circus had come to see our show because they heard about my fantastic mime act and they wanted to have a look, probably trying to steal ideas. But anyway, one of the people in the audience was another knife thrower, so I thought, oh, I'll see if I can impress them during my knife throwing act. It didn't quite work out quite like that. Joe Fool was standing at the knife board and I threw four knives down one side. That's quite easy, that was the simple bit. I just had four knives left to throw, and for some strange reason, I saw my mind drifted. I took the knife, and you're supposed to step over when you throw knives, because it's... Anyway, I didn't step over, and I threw across his body at a 45-degree angle, which is what you're not supposed to do, and it sort of, like, glanced off his arm a bit. Well, it didn't glance, it hit him quite violently, and his whole body shook. And the audience went really quiet, and then I turned around and went... And I did that for quite a while, and they weren't going for it. I'm like, oh, fucking hell, and I still had three knives in my hand left to throw, so I had to do them, and I sort of skulked off. And then afterwards, I thought, I'll say sorry to Joe, and I went to look for him. He disappeared, and somebody said, oh, haven't you heard? He's been taken to hospital. Because what had happened was, the knives sort of cut through his jacket and his T-shirt and sort of like missed his artery a bit. He was a bit of blood and some stitches and stuff. But to be honest, though, Joe was the sort of, it was good for the circus because we've got a sort of publicity, people heard about it and that. But to be honest, Joe was the sort of person that he loves all that little bit of drama. He loves to be the hero. So I was doing him a favour by stabbing him, because when he went to hospital, right, he can't have been that bad. He went in his full costume and he didn't take his big clown shoes off. And they put him on a little wheelchair and they pushed him in with his big clown shoes. And to be honest, that's not the action of somebody who was at death's door. So, yeah, I stayed with them for a few more months and then just went back to London and that. So that's the end of the story. I suppose the moral is, boredom makes you do stupid things. Don't join the circus, stab clowns, or make your own fireworks. Thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen.
So the night is not just about storytellers that are telling stories so brilliantly, and we're going to bring one on in just a moment. The night is also about you. Some of you have had forms to fill out, a couple for you here. Share your story. What secret identity have you kept from people? I hid my raucous university lifestyle from my parents and close family. How was it discovered? Some of them saw it on Facebook after my privacy settings changed. Who was that? Oh, there you are. Oh, there he is. There you go. Very good. What sort of photos were they? We're talking kind of alcohol, drug, sex?
Alcohol and a woman.
Oh, alcohol and a woman. Oh, good. Any more information on that?
I was mid-act.
Mid-act? Hello. Get up on stage. Okay, mid-act of shaking hands, of... Just shaking hands. Very good. Very good. Very nice. Okay, good. Thank you for your contribution. What's your name, sir?
I'm Joel.
Joel. Round of applause for Joel, ladies and gentlemen, for sharing. I really like how this night always takes on a sort of therapy feel towards the middle bit. We all sort of share with each other. It's very, very lovely. Are you ready for your next storyteller?
Yes.
Okay, I want the applause to come from you, sir. Please welcome to the stage Lauren, ladies and gentlemen.
Exciting. I'm going to tell you a story about how I was approached for sex by a complete stranger in the middle of the street, in the middle of the day, on Mother's Day, when I was living in Finsbury Park. And I say living, for the last couple of years I've been kind of sort of living a bit unconventionally, I suppose. I've been sort of sofa surfing a bit. Most of my friends, I think, regard me as an irritating sofa cushion rather than a friend now, which is a slightly sad situation. I mean, we also had some very lovely times there and ate a lot of Turkish delight and listened to a lot of Lou Reed. But, I mean, you know, the house was constantly freezing, so that I was kind of nearly always dressed almost entirely in green corduroy and three jumpers. So I was kind of, if you can imagine me at that point in Finsbury Park, in a kind of, in snowy weather particularly, but even in when it wasn't snowing, I was always sort of, you know, head to toe, green corduroy and jumpers, all of the jumpers. And no jumpers for anyone else. And kind of selfish of me, actually, really. You know, I would be sort of going back and forth from this house with an enormous rucksack on my back as well, full of Turkish delight. And jumpers. There was a point when I was sort of walking back from Manor House Station, and a lot of people, strangers, approached me quite a lot to tell me things. I have quite a receptive face for that kind of thing, and I've kind of gotten used to it. So when this guy sort of started walking in step with me along beside Finsbury Park, I thought, okay, I'll just brace myself, because I knew that he was going to talk to me and he'd probably confess something. So he was walking perfectly in step with me in Finsbury. I mean, I don't know why, this is just a visual aid for you here. I'm just walking on the spot in order to help you visualise walking in case you don't know what that looks like. But he was walking in step with me, and eventually he said, "Can I ask you a funny question?" I said, "Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's fine. Ask me a funny..." Oh, everyone always does. Even if I tried to stop you, I probably couldn't. So he said, "Are you single?" I was just like, Jesus, look at me. I'm dressed head to toe in green corduroy and jumpers. Obviously, I'm... Yes, I am. And I laughed a lot, and then I said, "Yeah, I am." And then he was like, sort of winding himself up, and he was like, yeah, okay. Can I ask you another funny question?" And I was like, yeah, go ahead. I mean, we're in this now together. And he says to me, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to ask you. And he didn't just ask me. He sort of prevaricated and said, "I've been looking for fun friends on Facebook." I was like, what does this mean? So I've been looking for fun friends on Facebook. And I was kind of, by that point, just being like, okay, what are you getting at here, man? And he was like, okay, I'm just going to ask you. And then he goes, "I'm looking for a regular sex partner. Is that the kind of thing that you would be interested in?" And it is, but if you can picture this, so I was sort of green corduroy, rucksack full of Turkish delight. He was sort of, I don't know, 15 years older than me, sort of just a kind of slightly innocuous looking man. Not that I think that age should be a barrier to what can loosely be described as love, but he just wasn't the kind of person I thought would approach me, but then I should have predicted it, really. And I just laughed in his face. Which it probably was unkind of me, but it was Mother's Day, come on. And then stopped at a bus stop under the sort of loose pretense that I was going to get some kind of bus out of the situation. And I just said, I'm sorry. No, in fact, I think I called him Pal. I think I just went, "Oh, sorry, Pal. No thanks." And then he sort of very cheerfully went, "Oh, all right then, see you later," and carried on walking down the road. Obviously, I couldn't carry on walking, but I sat in the bus stop and just laughed hysterically by myself for like 10 minutes straight. Part of the amazing thing as well, why I was laughing hysterically, was because I had to then do the phone call to my mum, the Mother's Day phone call of like, "Hi mum, I'm in London, sorry I can't be there for Mother's Day, but like, hope you're feeling motherly and really lovely and stuff." But the whole conversation with her, I was just desperate to tell her about it. So I was kind of having this weird sort of stunted conversation of like, "Hi mum, I really love you. Definitely nothing funny has happened to me in the last half an hour." And I was just like, "Yep, definitely love you loads. Can I talk to Dad?" And just tell my dad instead. And yeah, so I, at a point when I don't know, I was having a bit of a strange time and maybe not laughing that much, I remember that incident fondly as a time when I laughed an enormous amount. Thank you very much.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So mistaken identity is the thing that we've been talking about tonight. I just want to tell you something that happened to me involving mistaken identity. Doesn't make me look good, but I'll tell you. I've got a bit of a scammy head. I don't know if you sort of know what I mean by that, but I like to like work out the scam for things, like work my way around things. When I didn't have as much money as I do now, when I was a student, I discovered this little one-person Ponzi scheme that I invented myself with getting your hair done. So I don't know if you've ever had one of these leaflets. They're like recommend a friend. Have you seen those? Recommend a friend, and your friend gets half price, and you go back to the hairdresser, then you get half price, right? A well-known hair establishment I was doing this for, because I don't have that many friends, and I'm also got a very scammy head, I decided that I would go to different chains of this well-known hairdressers and turn up to the second one and say, "Hi, I'm Charlie Harrison's friend, Beck Stevens. And she's recommended me to the store, so I get half price. And then bonus, Charlie Harrison gets half price, right? So that's like two half prices just from one event." So I was doing this, doing quite well out of it. Half price hair, don't judge me. And I went to Covent Garden one day, went to do it, said, "Hi, I'm Beck Stevens, Charlie Harrison's friend." You know, it's going on, all these different names. And I was a bit distracted. I sat down in the chair, and she comes over with this form, and I'm filling it out. Beck Stevens, I know what I'm doing. I was thinking about other things. And she's a wild hairdresser. She comes over, she goes, "Oh, hi, I'm Tracy, I'm going to cut your hair today." I said, "Hi, I'm Charlie." Both of us look down at the paper where I've written Beck Stevens. Now, I don't know what you would do in this situation. Sort of like, what's the instant lie you think of here? It's my nickname. That's a good answer. That's a good answer. That's a sensible person's answer. The only two things I could think of in this situation were I'm in a play and I'm playing someone called Beck Stevens and I've got really into it, right? So I thought, don't do that. That's a bit weird. So I literally looked her in the mirror in the eye there and said, "I'm in the process of changing my identity." And then, of course, you have an hour with someone doing your hair. After saying that, it was awful. You know, you want to be like, "Oh, can you just make me look as different as possible? Shave it off, you know." So that's my story of mistaken identity. It's your last storyteller. Oh, no. Yeah, no, bad and good, but he's really, really amazing. Really, really excited to introduce him. So welcome to the stage, your final act of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I live here now, and I was raised by a really macho guy. My dad was in the war in Vietnam. He had post-traumatic stress disorder and a drinking problem, and all these things before you were allowed to talk about it, right? So I was raised at a time when boys don't, not only do we not cry, we don't talk about stuff either. You just keep quiet. Keep smiling, you be the rock, and everybody else can be crazy, but you're the guy that keeps everything together, right? Like, I'm sure some of you guys can relate to that a little bit, especially my ethnic brethren, that are in the room, right? So just to make this way worse, let me explain how I ended up looking like this, right? I have a Muslim father and a Jewish mother, which freaks people out, right? It freaks me out too. It freaks out religious people even, because according to religion, if your mom's a Jew, you're a Jew. But according to Islam, if your dad's a Muslim, you're a Muslim. What am I, imaginary storytellers? What am I? So I've always had a problem with my identity. And then to make things worse, we immigrated from Egypt to Brooklyn when I was 8 years old, which is a horrific. If you've ever been eight and been upset by, like, not having dessert, imagine moving to Brooklyn. Exponentially worse. So I grew up in a weird household, and I was thinking about doing this night tonight, and I did this writing exercise for this class that I had, and they told me just to quickly write how you were raised, right? And it's a short little thing. I have a lot of respect for the written word versus the spoken, so I'm just going to read it to you real quick. Forgive me, I know that's obnoxious a little bit, like you guys are a bunch of sleeping babies. And I'm like, especially with my accent, right? Everybody else sounds so educated. I'm like, me from America, right? Like, all right, so this is how I was raised. Describes how I was raised, and then I'll get into the rest of this. I was raised in the middle of two extremes. My family's definition of warmth was a head in the oven and feet in the freezer. And what I mean by that is that my mom overloved me and my dad over-disciplined me. Each thinking that they were secretly correcting the other's mistake. Right? I'm sure you guys can relate to some of this, right? But raising, how you raise your child proved to be so intimate a conversation that even people who shared a kid wouldn't dare have it, right? So I became a product of miscommunication. Sometimes I felt like an antique axe, right? Like my mom would treasure me like this valuable antique. She would show love, pride, and affection towards me even when other people didn't. It was as if she was this collector of art who knew these things and laughed at the ignorance of those who didn't know the value of this priceless item, right? But not my dad. My dad was like, the only good axe is one that works, right? He wanted an axe that he could slam into tough situations and have it tear chunks out. The less tough the axe seemed, the harder he'd swing. And he did actually see what my mom saw, but he didn't care to treat a tool like an antique, right? Because if he did, then his relationship would have to change with it, right? So he kept me at his level, a simple tool being held by a simple gardener, right? And that's kind of like, that's like my whole life in a nutshell. And then I started doing comedy, and this weird thing happened. I started talking about the stuff that they told me not to talk about all my life. And I thought, hey, I had a shitty dad, and that's okay, and that's just the way that it is. But what happened with comedy is, because it is sort of a cathartic process, as I started saying really creepy things on stage. Things that I thought were hysterical. You know? Things like, oh, my teachers could tell I was abused because whenever a kid hit me, I tried to hug him. It made people uncomfortable, thank you. Maybe my dad wasn't abusive. Maybe he was just really shitty at giving high fives. You know, like, things like that are making you uncomfortable now. It was. But what happened was I started talking about the things I wasn't supposed to talk about. And it changed me. And it changed, oddly, the shittiest part of this is that my dad died 10 years ago. He died of cancer. And right when the cancer started, we finally started getting close and we started speaking to each other and having a real relationship. But because cancer and stress are such close cousins, I didn't want to have the conversation with him about my childhood or the abuse or the drinking or any of that stuff. Or, hey, why punch a kid with his own toys? That's not nice, right? It made me just ask for soft toys. You should have seen my Christmas wish list. It was ridiculous. It was like spongy toy pillows, teddy bears with no eyes. Like, please, Dad. So I started talking about this in comedy after he died, because I couldn't do it when he was alive. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want the cancer to come faster. So I started doing stand-up, and I started talking about it in stand-up, and I started to feel better. You know, like I started to think that my dad wasn't such a bad guy. He was just raised in a shitty time, and he had shitty things happen to him, and that's how he became that way. So I started thinking, like, my dad was just a normal guy, and a vampire bit him. And he became a vampire, but like an old school one, right? And then he bit me, And now I'm like a vampire on Twilight. Where I'm like, I can have a girlfriend without eating her. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm working on it. I'm trying to be a better person. But, you know, like, it's funny. Like, I look at stuff that's out, like, on in the social media space right now. Like, you guys are familiar with the Yes All Women hashtag that came out. Well, if you're not, what it is there's yet another lunatic in America. Can you believe it? Another crazy? Shocker. Another guy in America at a school went and terrorized and murdered a lot of people with a gun. And he made a video, and what he said in the video is that women won't give me the time of day. I feel lonely. College is all about having sex and partying. And because nobody will give me that, I'm going to go to the hottest sorority house. I'm going to kill him. And he did. And he killed a bunch of people. And it's really, really sad. It's a terrible thing that happens. And it's too fast that it so quickly turns into this conversation about guns instead of what the issue really is that we don't talk. Men don't talk and women do. And that's our greatest weakness. That's our Achilles heel. Like women, you guys have that talk show. Loose women, right? We guys talk to each other. Like if men had a talk show, it'd be called Shut Up, Bro. Right? Stop saying sad things. Makes me really uncomfortable. I think of the Yes All Women platform, and I support it entirely because I don't think of myself as a man first. I think of somebody who's survived abuse. So I can understand what these women are talking about in this platform. And basically what they're talking about in social media is to remind all of us about the rape culture that's out there. That women are scared. That, like, it takes a lot for me to get nervous crossing the street. I'm the bad guy in movies. Do you know what I mean? But anytime a girl leaves my house, I walk her to the car because they can get raped, and it could happen. That's something that they think about all the time. And all it is just making men a little bit more aware of it. So if you're on a street and it's late at night and you've got food on your mouth because you're drunk, just cross on the other side. Give the lady a break. Do you know what I mean? That's all it is. It's just being aware of what they go through. And I have a ton of respect for women. I love that you guys talk to each other and help each other. I wish we did it more as men. And so... The point of this whole story is that when I started talking about the things I wasn't supposed to talk about, when I started crying, I wasn't allowed to cry as an adult. A weird thing happened in therapy, and I'm going to tell you this because I want you to know that I'm still an asshole a little bit. So here's what happened. I went to therapy, and I told this story to my therapist about my dad, and he goes, wow, that's really fucked up. And I go, are you supposed to say that? Are you? You're like, you're right there. Like, that's like a doctor going, oh, Jesus. Like, that's not what you're supposed to say. That doesn't make me feel good. And he goes, he's all, do you think crying is wrong? And I'm like, no. Yes. So he tells me, he's like, I want you to do this exercise. He's like, I think crying might help you. Maybe crying is about releasing pain, and if you have these things that you're holding inside you, maybe if you cry a little bit, you know, or allow yourself to be sad. How is that? Every morning, 5 minutes, allow yourself to be sad. I'm like, I don't like this. So the first 3 mornings, I didn't do it. Fourth morning, I said, okay, I'll try it. I allowed myself to be sad. And I cry a little bit, right? Second morning, a little bit more. Third morning, I'm driving to work. I start crying in my car. Crying in my car like somebody stabbed me. Do you know what I mean? Like bawling. And I'm at the stoplight. And this sweet woman pulls up next to me. And she sees me. And women are so empathetic. She looks at me and she goes, oh, like, aw. Oh, you know, like she felt bad. And I looked at her and I just went, fuck you. So I'm working on it. I'm still an asshole. But what it did for me is that my dad's been gone for 10 years, and I have a great relationship with him now. You know, like, I really do. I mean that genuinely. I really do. Because I understand him better now. I don't blame him anymore. And all of that's been because I get up on stage and I talk about him. And when I'm off stage, I'm not angry anymore. And that anger being gone just makes you a happier, healthier person. And I'll tell you this last weird thing, is that I have a friend of mine who's going through a divorce right now. She's a stand-up comedian, and she's also a professional chef. So food and comedy are her big passions. She's going through the divorce, so she wants to write this story now, this book, now when she's in pain. And she asked different people to be different chapters in the book. And the question is, your biggest heartache and your comfort food that goes with it, the thing that makes you feel better. So I went through my romantic Rolodex, And for some reason, I kept going back to my dad. That was my biggest heartache. When I see shows like Modern Family and people golfing together and all that, I'm like, oh, I wish I could have done that with my dad. But I didn't, right? So my biggest heartache was my dad, and because we just didn't have a father-son experience at all. And she goes, what's your biggest comfort food? And all my life, I thought I hated this guy. And I go, fulmadummas. A fulmadummas is an Egyptian dish, like a really traditional Egyptian dish. And I said it like without even thinking, just fulmadummas right away. And I stopped and I went, oh my God. And she goes, what? And I go, that's the only food my dad's ever made. In Egypt, fulmadummas is to Egyptians what barbecue is to Australians. It's the one time where like, women, get out of the kitchen. It's the guy's turn. And so even though I thought I hated this man like my whole life, I really didn't. And it just completely changed my story. It completely changed my life. And it was all just from talking about it. So thanks for letting me talk to you guys about it. And thanks.
Tana, ladies and gentlemen. So that brings us to the end of the evening. Just give a final round of applause to all the storytellers tonight. We had Tony Hickson, Lauren Stone, and Tana Catan. And your producer, Matt Hill. Thank you very much. I've been Charlie Harrison.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.